Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
Every now and again here at Second Captains, we like to take an episode we've done on the World Service and throw it open to everybody, especially when it's one of those conversations that goes beyond sport and reaches into other areas of life. And that is exactly what we're doing today on the day that Northern Ireland turns 100 years old. You're going to hear two of our favourite regular guests, Oisín McConville and Andrew Trimble, talk about growing up in the North and their evolving ideas about identity, the segregation that still exists in society there, the impact on them of the recent rioting in the streets, and some ideas on how things can potentially move forward. Now, we wanted to have this chat as soon as we saw Andrew pop up on the recent Clare Byrne Live TV special on a United Ireland and the possibility of a border poll. He took his place in amongst all the political heavy hitters and he did a really good job. His central point that night was that there's still a tendency for everything to be binary. You're identified as green or orange, but he feels part of a growing middle ground that don't want to be identified simply in those terms. And we got a little, we got to know a little bit about his own background.
The Taoiseach will be joining me later in the programme, and coming up after this break, the former Ireland and Ulster rugby player Andrew Trimble on how he didn't even know he was a Protestant for most of his childhood. We'll see you after this.
Always sounds a little more dramatic on live TV. Anyway, we thought we'd get Andrew on to talk in more detail about his point of view, along with Oisín, who comes from a slightly different background, it's fair to say, an Armagh Gaelic footballer who grew up in Crossmaglen in the shadow of the British Army base that was set up on their GAA pitch. I think this conversation worked out really well. I certainly enjoyed it. Hope you agree. And if this is the kind of work that you feel is worth supporting, then do have a think about becoming a member on secondcaptains.com for a fiver a month plus VAT, because it's the only way we can keep the show on the road. But have more than a think. I mean, ideally, I want you to have a think and then decide, yes, I do want to support and become a member. But, you know, the starting point is to have a little think, go on secondcaptains.com, see what your fiver gets you, and then take it from there. We'd love to have you on board. In the meantime, enjoy the chat.
Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
I think about no damn LeVar.
Yes, they are.
Owen McDevitt from Ireland's Second Captain Show.
Owen McDevitt, you're a gold piece of work.
You're looking good. I know you're feeling good.
Owen, you're amazing.
I'm like, yeah.
2,000 podcast recordings today and the Second Captain Show in Ireland. Owen McDevitt.
Owen, I like you and I like your style.
Yeah. I hear you in your 40s and you're bald headed. Let's just put it this way. You ahead of
Hey, Jack Charlton, we're just about out of time. Been a pleasure talking to you.
I can't believe it, dog. I know what 2,000 is. And that's a heck of a feat. But any man, I love your style.
It's delicious.
I'm Owen McDevitt.
Owen McDevitt.
He's a non-event as far as I'm concerned.
You're bald-headed.
All right, who better to thrash out questions of identity in Northern Ireland with than Andrew Trimble, the man who famously didn't even know he was a Protestant for most of his childhood. Hi, Andrew.
How you doing? How you getting on, fellas?
We're good. And Oisín McConville, same for you. I'm sure, Oisín, you're probably in your mid to late 20s by the time you realised you were a Catholic, yeah?
Fenian, I think, was the first. Whenever I was told I was a Fenian, that was the first time I knew I was a Catholic.
Yeah. Andrew, tell us. First of all, well done on, and genuinely well done on that performance on Clare Byrne. I thought it was really interesting that you did it, that you were a part of it, and you might tell us how it came about. But I mean, the actual experience of doing it. This is obviously outside the comfort zone that we would normally associate with a sports person or a former sports person.
Massively outside of my comfort zone. I think someone at RTE had seen something I'd done with Joe, Dion Fanning. I did a piece with him and touched on a couple of those things in terms of that identity piece. And they approached me and asked me if I would do it. And there was nobody lined up at this stage, so I had no idea, like, Varadkar and Mary, like, the heavyweights that were going to be involved. So, but even then, I knew, obviously, RTE. But again, up north, I don't really watch much RTE. I didn't realize Clare Byrne was as big a deal as it was until I was texting Barry, my Potholes and Penguins colleague, and he goes, "This is a big deal. get your finger out." So actually, I was quite busy with work and with the kids and stuff up in the run up to it. So I actually just texted him and said, "Listen, I'm not going to be able to do this well, so I'm not going to do it because I know there's a kind of big responsibility, so I'm not going to have time to really prepare." And then they came back to me and they said they really wanted me to do it. And in hindsight, I thought that was strange at the time. But in hindsight, that opinion, that position is really important. And not that my opinion isn't important, but that opinion I think is important. Mm. And I recognized how important it was to have that type of a voice on, and just not your typical kind of polarized opinions. And I was a nervous wreck.
Were you?
I was. And I did carve out some time on Monday, and I just rehearsed what I was going to say, and I hope I didn't sound too robotic. I wanted to try and get that balance of just being myself and it being conversational, but also, you know, articulating something correctly and not cocking it up, because I knew there was a good kind of responsibility in what I was doing. So yeah, I was happy how it went in the end, and it seemed to be well received.
Yeah, did you feel like you kind of got into your flow once you were on air? You know, it's almost like playing a match, I suppose.
A little bit. I did. I wasn't going to get too confident and start calling people out. Joe Brawley, what's he saying, this guy?
well, he didn't last long. You didn't have to worry about Joe.
I was worried about Joe because he came on a rate of knots, and I was like, "This guy's hilarious. He just stirs things up, and he's so articulate. He's so smart, and he had something to say because he was well prepared." And he said this afterwards, but the way he started, I was going, like, it was all a little bit tame and nicey until he came on. I thought, this is about to get way more interesting, and I hope not at my expense.
Yes, we are familiar with that dynamic, Oisín, with Brawley. But Andrew, what's the reaction been since he did it in the north in particular?
Slightly changed with time. I'd say the immediate reaction was overwhelmingly positive, really, really positive, from loads of people on Twitter, which is, you know, Twitter's not always that positive an environment to get feedback. Please give me some feedback. I'd love to hear your thoughts, everyone. Said no one any time on Twitter. But really, really positive. I was really encouraged, and it made me think that there's a lot of support for that position, and even a lot of people, a lot of my friends. And I only realized how kind of far removed I am from politics, or even, like, you know, conversations with my friends, people I would know well. We don't talk about politics, and I became aware of that whenever they reached out to me and said, "Listen, what you articulated there is exactly, that's my position," and that really encourages me to know that that is a strong position, that middle ground, because I think that's the only chance that we have of making some sort of progress. But I did feel at the start, do you remember the old BBC video where they were supposed to go to a technology correspondent and they brought on the cleaner?
Yes.
That is how I felt.
You did say the reaction changed over time, though. What do you mean by that?
So the initial reaction was great, and then I'd say a week later, the guys who were debating back and forth and still tagging me in the conversation, because on Twitter, obviously, they don't actively tag you in it, but they just don't untag you, so you're still part of this game of tennis going back and forth. And I wasn't getting involved. I'd done my bit and I wanted to get out of there. But I'd say towards the end of the week, there was a few less positive comments, and in no way was I discouraged by that at all. I just thought there's idiots out there, and it doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Oisín, did you watch that show, and how did you rate Andrew's performance, if so?
Yeah, very good, because, like, genuinely, maybe Andrew didn't know what to expect from himself, but I certainly didn't know what to expect from the general chat. And then I was, to be honest, I was looking forward to Brawley throwing in the grenade, but he didn't last long enough. I would be a bit similar to Andrew in that I found myself on talking about the border and what the border meant to me on Claiborne. And the next thing, Ian Paisley Jr. Was on alongside me. And that frightened the life out of me because I have a couple of, there's a couple of people who would, I would say, have my interests at heart. And they consistently tell me, avoid politics at all right. costs. And just, you know, to go on there and hear that those different voices and different pieces of opinion, I thought was really, really interesting and something that maybe we don't hear enough of. And I think the voice that Andrew offered, or the opinion that Andrew offered that night, is sometimes like a voice in the wilderness that we don't really hear that much of.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way you phrase it. People tell you to avoid politics, you know. But, I mean, I suppose it, like, everything is political when you're talking about how a country is. But I think it's more your own experiences as well. And that's what we want to get into here. I mean, I know you're quite keen to have this chat, Oisin. So obviously you haven't been put off by these people over the years who've told you just don't get involved in this kind of stuff at all.
But I agree, that's exactly the point, though, Owen. You know, for me, a lot of this chat is not politics. A lot of this chat is to do with people's real lived experiences day to day, what you experience when you grew up, what I experienced when you grew up. My kids know nothing about, they learn a little bit in school, but they know nothing about the experiences of where I grew up. And when I look at where I'm growing up and where they're growing up, I mean, they are absolutely, you would not believe how poles apart they are. And I think because of that, I think this conversation is certainly worth having. And because all of the conversations around this that we've had in the past have all, I think, they've all had a completely different set of circumstances. People are, their experiences of peace is completely different to, as I say, to the experiences that I had when I was growing up.
Well, Andrew, what was your experience? I mean, you made the point that sometimes you might get to the age of 18 in Northern Ireland and meet a Catholic or Protestant for the first time. Like, was that the case for you?
No, it wasn't the case for me because I played rugby, and because I you know, there was a few guys who went to the local Catholic school who I played rugby with, and then I knew those guys. And then, yeah, just I played a lot of different sports, not just rugby. You know, played a lot of tennis and golf, and you meet a lot of different people from different backgrounds. I'm just saying, I don't think it's that common, but I think it does happen. It does happen. Like, people get to 18, and I just think that's criminal. I just think it's so bizarre and just so unhealthy that we can have only that one little exposure and no kind of understanding of the different types of people that we share a very small country with, and it's just really, really strange. And how, I just don't see how we expect, so people talk about, you know, a couple of generations time, then they're slightly more removed from it, and I think that will obviously help. But if then that second, third, fourth generation, they still only spend time with people who have their background, whether that be political, religious, but if you just spend time with a certain type of people, then you're going to be really narrow in your worldview in general. So I think that's an unhealthy mindset, or an unhealthy place to find yourself anyway. It wasn't my experience. I was lucky that we weren't a Protestant family. We were, but we were a rugby family. And so I think sport, I think, is the opportunity to kind of bridge those gaps. Now, sport's not perfect, because rugby is effectively seen as a British sport, Gaelic seen as an Irish sport. Football, you thought, might be the one chance we have. Right, happy days, we've got it. We've got everybody captured. But then they've got Catholic clubs and Protestant clubs, and they cocked it up. We had one opportunity to kind of capture that sport. So it's just, you know, I think you touched on it there. Everything's political. Everything is political. And it's so frustrating that everything up here especially kind of aligns you to green or orange, and that is so frustrating, because there's so much more going on, and we've so much more in common, and we've so much more shared values than we do about the ideologies that separate us.
Yeah, Andrew's comment about, you know, getting to the age of 18 without meeting a Catholic or a Protestant, like, it did really jump out at people, Oisin. So I'd just like to ask you that question as well. Like, there, it must have been quite late in your life before you met a Protestant, and I mean met a Protestant on an equal footing in a social environment where you both felt entirely comfortable. I mean, you met a few Protestants at CrossFit and GA pitch, but that's neither here nor there.
No, see, that is the thing. You know, people always think about, you know, the troubles and they think Protestants and Catholics, but that wasn't my experience of it. My experience was the British Army. They came, as far as we were concerned, they took over a certain part of the town, and I always grew up with the Brits out. You know, that was very much to the forefront of my mind. And to be honest, growing up in a place where, like I grew up in, there are very few Protestant families. Very few Protestant families. And it was only when I started to go to St. Pat's Grammar School in Armagh. There was people on the bus from, say, Newton Hamilton who were going to the Royal School in Armagh. They sat down the front, we sat down the back. But I did see them. And I knew that that they were Protestant and they knew that I was Catholic. By the time I had... Well, I suppose the thing about the North around that time was people always wanted to know if you're a Protestant or Catholic. Now, how did you come about that? Well, first of all, your name. We were always told if we were asked, let's say we were in Belfast, we were asked where we were from, we always said Newry, because that leaves the ball up in the air. There's nothing definitive about Newry, whereas if you say Cross McGlen, and then my mum went all out calling me Oisin, so like there's no real disguise in that. And I found that seemed to be the norm, as I said. It was just that sussing
out.
So
did you change your name when you went into Belfast?
No.
No.
No, I didn't. And you know what? I didn't spend a lot of time in Belfast. And then I suppose you're talking about, you know, real social interaction. I suppose whenever things start to go well for you from a sporting point of view, you're attending dinners and you're attending ceremonies and prize givings and all that sort of thing. And then you're rubbing shoulders with rugby gays and golfers and cricketers and all that sort of thing. And I remember being at an Armagh Sports Awards, and there was four of us up for Armagh Sports Person of the Year. One of them was a cricketer. And I happened to be sitting beside him at the thing. And as you know, Murph, at this stage,
yep,
I have been watching cricket for a long, long time. I remember getting stumps. Myself and my brother, we had stumps and the whole lot, and we took them over to the local football pitch. And I just remember the look that I got from a couple of people when we were playing cricket, and I just thought, let's leave this in the backyard. It might not be that big, but leave it. Let's leave.
Might not be championship-like, this pitch, but we'll just go with it.
Yeah, but I just found that, you know, that I was able to have a civil conversation. We were both into our sport. He didn't know a lot about Gaelic football. He knew I was a Gaelic footballer, but I knew a hell of a lot about cricket. And it gave us like a common ground. And then I suppose from that point, I would consider that some of the gays who are involved in the Irish League and even some of the rugby gays and some of the gays who play cricket and different things like that. And then you sort of start to build up a bit of a rapport, a bit of a relationship. I write for a paper in the North, which would be fair to say predominantly a Protestant paper. And again, you know, that's another thing that's questioned, you know, when you start to do that. I mean, I'm talking 12, 13 years ago when I started writing for them. And you know, there's lots of those things, but I do think that side of things has moved on dramatically. But I do think that there's still I think there's still a certain element that, for me, that feels both on the Catholic side and the Protestant side, that have a vested interest that this continue in some form or another, that division and that segregation, that it continues in some way. And I suppose it's up to us as a generation not to wait on the next generation to... Because genuinely, I thought when I... Like, I'm 45 now, and I thought when I'm 45, it'll be a completely different plane that we're walking from, and it is in a certain way, but in another way, a lot of the stuff that is going on underneath remains largely the same.
Okay, I want to explore that further, but I am interested, Andrew. I mean, both of you have talked about sport and all that, and you're kind of extreme examples in that you both got to the very top. Like, Andrew, in your case, you represented the entire island of Ireland. It's something you referred to briefly on your TV appearance. I know there's not much time to really kind of delve into it there. Is it easy for you to articulate to us how you felt representing Ireland as an island, standing there when Aaron Levine, for example, was being played, and what the feeling was in the pit of your stomach?
Yeah, just very proud, very proud. Because we're a rugby family, and because my dad brought me to rugby games from when I was a youngster, that was always the pathway. That was always my dream, my aspiration, what I wanted to achieve. I wanted to play for Ireland, and there was no contradiction in, you know, having a British passport when I was younger and playing for Ireland, and then, you know, having both passports now. For me, I felt really connected, really plugged into that, and really proud that I represented the people all around the island. One thing, just picking up a couple of things Oshin's saying there. I think it's really important that we understand each other. I think we need to spend time together, and the current mechanisms in place don't allow that, I think, in Northern Ireland, or discourage that to a certain extent, so make it difficult. And one thing, so my business partner and I, he's a Catholic fella, and we slag each other. We slag each other the whole time. And I think it's really important that we maintain a sense of humor, because and you can only do that. I remember, like, whenever you go into a team environment at the start, no one knows each other. You get to know each other, and And then, like, a week later, say you go on a preseason camp or something, everybody gets to know each other. What happens by the end of the week? Everybody's abusing each other and slagging each other, and everybody's mates. And that's a healthy environment. But you can only get there, you can only kind of express that sense of humor and that shared sense of humor whenever we spend time together. We don't spend time together, and that's the reason why we don't understand each other and we don't appreciate each other's perspectives. And that's why then we become very single-minded and polarized in how we see things.
Does that start in school? Does it, a lot of it boil down to segregated schooling, which, you know, there was a report only in 2017 that only 7% of schools were integrated, which seems absolutely extraordinary from down here.
Yeah, integrated education is kind of it's a bit of a loaded phrase up here. You know, you think, again, with a lot of things, you think you mean something else by it, but, you know, it should just be education, and we're segregated education, which is that's the weird thing, us, you know, trying to transition into integrated education. Everyone else has integrated education, they just call it education, you know. And I think the problem is that we've joined education and religion, and I think we need to separate them. We need to take them out. If you want to go to church, you go to church the weekend, or you do religious stuff, you know, outside of school, because I don't think that should be, I think they should be separated. I think that's what causes difficulties with teaching certificates for Catholic schools, or, you know, guys feeling like they're not welcome in, you know, state schools, Protestant schools, whatever it is. And again, I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert in any of that stuff, but there's something holding us back. And maybe it's just the entrenched kind of old kind of political agenda. And that's a shame, because it's holding us back from actually thriving and just getting to know each other, and just maybe understanding just shared values and just moving forward together, and not separate, because I think that's really important for us.
Yeah, I mean, it seems so obvious in some ways, Oisín, that, like, you know, I'm thinking about it maybe in a certain way from my mindset growing up in Dublin, and I'm saying integrated school, like, of course, like, basically I just mean schooling, you know, it seems so obvious, but I'm throwing questions at you guys and maybe different things are popping into your head. It does seem like a pretty obvious step to take over a period of a generation. You should be able to get kids to mingle in schools, I would have thought, fairly easily before they have time for their own prejudices to really form.
You wouldn't believe how difficult that would be.
Why? What makes it so difficult?
I think because, like, if you think of the area that, again, that I grew up in, we don't have Protestant families, and I'm pretty sure that in St. Patrick's Primary School in Crossmaglen, where my kids go to school, There are one or two, three, four Protestant kids out of 450. So they are just kids, because nobody's asking at primary school level, are you a Protestant or are you a Catholic? And I think you're so right in saying that that's where it starts. But we used to do a thing in, I think it was maybe geography, bit of politics about gerrymandering, and that was to do with splitting places up into political areas that were going to be advantageous for certain parts of the community. And I think when I think of a lot of the areas, you drive into them or you drive through them, and I have drove through them all. Anybody who watches Ulster, has watched Ulster football, will realise that no matter where you drive, it's usually segregated in this way. You drive through a small village or town, and there's either Union Jacks up on it or there's tricolours. And therefore, I think that split, especially at primary school level, is very, very difficult. And I think that's where it should start. So you're talking a lot of times about location. Obviously, if you go to a big urban area like Belfast, it seems more doable there. But Belfast isn't actually a massive place. Like if you compare it to the likes of Dublin and that. But I also think then that, you know, when it comes to secondary school, I think, you know, there's another opportunity to do that. And there are some integrated schools, and a couple of the integrated schools that I'm thinking of in particular, as far as I know, seem to be going really, really well. And I suppose they haven't just ticked the box, but a lot of those schools have actually excelled. But yet there seems to be a reluctance to kick on and try and have more of that integrated education, because to be honest, it seems to be something which has been completely put on the back burner over the last, maybe even up to the last 10 years, but certainly in recent times, I can't think of anybody having a serious drive towards integrated schools. I trained to be an addiction counsellor, and I went to a place when I was in trouble called Coonwurra, and I went back to do my hours there, and that was in Newry, okay? And when I went in there, I had to do 500 hours, so I was counselling people. And when I went in there, I was counselling, one of the guys I was counselling early on was an ex-IRA man. And one of the guys I was counselling early on was an ex-RUC man. Because anybody who knows anything about the North will realise that as far as beds or services, as far as addiction concerned, tiny. Tiny opportunities to go anywhere. So this was an ex-RUC man. And the reason why I wanted to mention that is because both stories were different, but both men were suffering from exactly the same legacy issues and exactly the same issues that were holding themselves back. Why they were drinking, why they were trying to forget what had gone on in the past, all those sort of things. These were guys from both sides of the community, and yet, honestly, you would not believe how alike these two people were and the things that had gone on in their lives, their experiences, and what they had done to try and cope with that. And I know I'm getting away from education, but the reason why I wanted to mention that is because, as I say, we are more alike than we think we are. And that's, and it may be an obvious thing to say, but it's something that really isn't said that often.
I mean, we can't exactly sit on our high horse from down here either, Andrew, because, I mean, the fact of the matter is, religion is still a huge part of, I think, 90% of the schools. There is no separation of church and state down here either. But I do kind of find it interesting from an educational point of view. I think there may have been an assumption. I'd be interested to hear what you think of this. Like, after kind of the Good Friday Agreement and into this century, that it would just happen, you know, and that as part of the Good Friday Agreement, okay, we're in peacetime now, school education will get integrated, you know, and it'll just happen. And now the whole thing is kind of curdled a bit. It's stagnated a little bit. And there's a realization that actually this doesn't happen unless people actually make the decision to make it happen.
You're right. I think there has to be a definite, there has to be a line in the sand. There has to be something definite done. There has to be something actively done. There needs to be a tough decision made at some stage. And with everything, not just education, with everything, to make a tough decision, someone needs to concede. Someone needs to say, I understand where you're coming from. We're happy to concede in this point. And that just is not necessarily all that common a mindset on both sides.
Yeah, but you were saying you feel like it is a more common mindset now that it has been. I mean, this is you touched on this in the set. This is why you felt it was important to go on national television and put that viewpoint across to make sure that people north and south understood that there is a growing constituency of people who don't just see themselves one way and who are, I don't even know what's the right way to phrase it, Andrew, but who are happy to make compromises.
Yeah, I think so. I think that middle ground, don't see, there should be a hybrid kind of understanding of identity, or just a more nuanced, more complex understanding of where everybody's coming from and a bit of a shared identity. I wasn't arguing that is a larger representation of Northern Ireland. Or maybe I was saying, I hope it is. And whenever I said, I got lots of support back, lots of people texting me, people who haven't been in touch with for a while, obviously the last year. But lots of people reaching out to me say, that's exactly where I stand. But is that because that is a larger representation of people in Northern Ireland, or is that the people I spend time with? So I like, that's completely skewed in my mind. I don't know.
Yeah, like what you're saying is that, like, I'm just, you know, I'm surmising here that they would be from a different background to the young lads we see rioting on the streets in Belfast, for example, who obviously feel a very different.
Absolutely, way. There were no rioters texting me to say.
You can confirm that you weren't involved in that in any way. Yeah.
No, I wasn't involved. I did. It's the where one of the flashpoints was. Is, you know, 10 minutes from my house, and I did drive home from that on Easter Saturday with the three kids in the car. Went past that roundabout where the car got burnt out, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, half an hour later, then all hell had broken loose. And yeah, it is frightening to think that, you know, there's guys in Balaclava standing beside the road, and all, if you arrive down there wearing a Balaclava, like, what's your intention? There's only one thing in your mind. I think it's really sad, and it's cheap point scoring. You know, the Bobby Storey funeral, was everybody was talking about it for a couple of weeks, and I would imagine a lot of people who arrived down to burn out cars and to cause trouble maybe weren't exactly sure why they were there. Something to do with the Bobby Storey funeral, something to do with something else, and it's the same thing on both sides, because thinking RHI, you know, just chaos, and it's just no one ever misses an opportunity to say that we're gonna hammer you for that. No one ever does, but Nelson Mandela did in the World Cup in 95. No one ever does that. And I think there is, I hope there is a bigger representation of people who would be prepared to do that, to concede, to understand, to spend time together, just to appreciate someone else's perspective, and then hopefully that'll be a more healthy outcome.
Did you try to explain the violence to your kids? Because I'm interested, like, as Oisin said earlier on, your kids are growing up in just a completely different, well, a largely different society than you guys did, and but at the same time, what we saw a couple of weeks ago was very reminiscent of the scenes from back in the day. Are your kids old enough to understand any of this stuff, or are you going to leave that for now?
Yeah, well, interestingly, my oldest, Jack, who's six, nearly six, he's the one of the three who'd be the most kind of sensitive, and he's the oldest, so he understands it more. And whenever we come home, then, you know, we were looking on the phone and seeing, you know, videos and stuff, and anybody who has kids know they pick up way more than you think they're picking up. And yeah, he got a little bit upset, and he got a little bit like worried and concerned, and he asked, like, it's just so sad, like, you know, the petrol bomb was thrown into the car, and Jack said, did they get out in time, you know? And it is worrying. That's, he knows we drove past that, he knows that's going on not far from our house, and yeah, we try our best. I would love it if my kids, when they get to whatever age I was, whenever I didn't know if I was a Catholic or Protestant, I would love if they came and asked me if they were Catholics or Protestants. I think that would be a really good sign that we'd done a decent job. Granted, it's difficult. I wonder if my mum, kind of thought, that this moment has kind of come, Andrew's, almost like if, kids come and ask, where do babies come from? That inevitable moment. we're going to have to tell them.
Tricky conversation. Yeah. Oisín, what about that? Did what you saw a couple of weeks ago shake your belief that this is a better society for your kids to grow up in?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I had mentioned way back from when they talked about a hard border, and I just thought, nah, that's a recipe for disaster, especially up, where we lived. And even just the prospect of us going back anywhere close to that. And then the scenes, like, I have been able to make sure that our kids haven't seen any of that, because obviously it's a lot easier to do that when you're not living close to it or you're not in the midst of it. So they don't know anything about that. They're maybe hearing different things at school or whatever, but that certainly hasn't been their experience, and that they haven't mentioned it. So but yeah, from a personal point of view, it's really, really sad. And you know what, when you look at the ages of these guys, and there's absolutely no doubt, just what Andrew said, a lot of these guys don't know why they're burning stuff. They don't know why they're throwing petrol bombs at police. And that for me is probably the saddest part of the whole thing. And then you see, adults encouraging, this sort of behaviour. And it's just really, really sad that, all the progress we've made, and we talk about all the progress we've made, and yet it just makes you wonder just how far have we come. Even like, I even know myself, like, and I would be very conscious of this, even going on Clareborn or going on radio, I don't say Northern Ireland, I say the north of Ireland. I remember saying Northern Ireland one time, and the amount of people that I could be walking down the street, and the amount of people that would wind down the window and tell me that they weren't from Northern Ireland, they were from the north of Ireland. You look at the GAA, the way they communicate things as far as Ulster's concerned, they call it the six counties, or they call it, and we are fucking obsessed with fucking language and how one side of the community says this and how we say that. And you're talking about Joe Brawley, and I often have sat on and done different forums and different things with Joe Brawley, and I said, Joe, just because one of the things I used to say to Joe on a regular basis, just because you have more vocabulary than me doesn't make your point any better than mine, okay? And the thing about that, about the vocabulary, about how we describe things, about how I'm conscious of not, going on TV and not saying Northern Ireland, but saying the north of Ireland. How far have I come, really? Like, do you know what I mean? That I would be still conscious of stuff like that, and how important that is, and how I care about what other people think about what I say. And I suppose, whereas, in certain aspects, and the most important one for me is that we are not living in a society where bombs, killing, shootings, all that sort of thing is commonplace day in, day out. That's not where I want to be. I am, the peace in this area here has made an unbelievable amount of difference as far as how people go about their day-to-day lives, how they live their lives, how young people are growing up. But then you reel things back a little bit, and you think, just how far have we come? So how far have I come? Do you know what I mean? That I am not comfortable saying what I want to say sometimes, So that's where...
Well, you have, though, Oisín. You know what I mean? Like, without... blowing smoke up you, like, we are talking about Cross Maglen, which is, which was devastated, but absolutely devastated by the Troubles. And you tell me, the journey that you've gone on from saying, you know, you started playing for representing Armagh 92, 93, 94 minor teams and stuff like that. Like, you have come a long way from then, surely.
I would imagine that I have come a long way, and I'm hesitant to say that some of my best friends are Protestant because when I hear people saying that, I go, fuck, he protests a little bit too much. But anyway, but I suppose I have, because I have now an experience of the fact that we are very, very alike. Andrew said we were living in a very, very small place together. We are integrating all the time. It takes me back to the scene in Father Ted, where he says those damn Protestants up to no good again. and to be honest, look, that's the impression that we had for years. The only thing I would say about this area here was that, you know, it never seemed to be, you know, a Catholic Protestant thing, but we knew that there was a major difference between as far as we were concerned, us and them, okay. But the fight that we were having, or the fight that was going on up here, as far as the troubles were concerned, was the IRA and the Brits. And when your windows used to be blown in on a regular basis, we used to, everybody in the house, we used to all go get our dustpan and brush. We used to take a different window each, sweep up the glass, throw it in the bin, a glazer used to come, put in the window, and 10 minutes later, we get on with our lives as if nothing happened. Mm. Like, I seen things at 7, 8, 9 years of age that I never should have seen in my life, that a lot of people who are going through life will never ever see, thankfully. And that was never addressed. We never, and you think of all the people in the north of Ireland who have seen these things. You think of the legacy issues that have gone on that have never been addressed. You think of the rates of suicide in the north, compared with the rest of the UK and compared with Ireland, off the charts. You think about the self-harm issues, that you think about the addiction issues, think about all those sort of things. And a lot of those things are coming from what people have seen in the past, from the legacy issues, all that sort of thing. And yet we have never been able to address those properly. And you know what? That's part of us moving on as well, is to be able to address what has happened in the past and try and leave that in the past and try and take a step forward. But every time we seem to take a step forward, and every time you think there's a chink of light, you know, something seems to happen. And again, just exactly what Andrew said, that the other side jumps on us, goes to town on us. We couldn't even come together in a pandemic. Mm. We couldn't even come together. And this goes from Sinn Féin and DUP in the north, and not even that all-island approach. I mean, people were talking about an all-island approach. I mean, I don't know how Andrew felt, but I knew there was never going to be an all-island approach, because you know what? They couldn't even agree in the north what way things were going to go. And for me, that was a real eye-opener, that, you know, how are we ever going to progress? And you know what? How are we going to progress? We may be able to progress with that middle ground. We may be able to progress whenever people don't see it as an orange and green thing. And at the minute, that seems as far away as it ever has for me.
It does seem a pretty bleak picture we're painting here. Am I naive to think that there are good things happening, that there are things you can cling to, Andrew? Like, you know, we've mentioned Joe Brodie a few times, but he just happened to write about the East Belfast GAA club, for example, that people have been mentioning in the last year. They've just started their underage division, but they've 400 adult playing members. The women's team apparently played their first league match, and 9 of their players had never seen a GAA pitch before. You know, the whole point is that they're not asked what community they're from, anything like that. You just join the GAA club. Well, I'm not saying all Protestants or all unionists have to play GAA, Andrew, and that's the way out of this. But, you know, like, sport is an area that has a checkered history. Some good stuff has happened, some bad stuff has happened. But, I mean, there are surely things, aside from maybe the education that we've talked of, that can help just provide an area that you talk about to have those conversations in, and for people who are like-minded but from different communities to come together in.
Yeah, music and arts is another one as well, and real importance there, just to bring people together who share a value and share an interest, and just spend time together and get to know each other and understand each other more based on that kind of shared interest. I think there's loads of hope. I think there's loads of hope and lots of stuff to be optimistic about. I think there is a growing middle ground. I think there's more and more people who want just to understand each other more, to share the future together, I suppose, and to move away. Everybody, I think, is fed up with polarized politics. And the problem is that everybody's fed up with that, but they're still the guys in power, and they're still the guys calling the shots, and they're still the ones kind of dictating the narrative. Now, this might be naive of me to say that if there's that much support, it would be reflected in the politics, and it's not being reflected in the politics at the minute. Is that because we need some sort of something innovative and creative, and some different angle, something to tap into that, or kind of to mobilize that that middle ground? Maybe, or maybe just concessions or understanding, or I don't know what the solution is, but I hope and trust. I do think trust and understanding.
Because if we get together, if you know, both sides of the community, and one says, well, I'm going middle ground, are you?
Mm. You go first.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go first. No, you. Yeah. No, you go. No. And unless we put them into the polling booths together, it's going to be based on trust. And that trust doesn't seem to be there at the minute, you know.
Oisín, what you're talking about there, that I find what you said there really challenging. So whenever you said you don't say Northern Ireland, you say the North of Ireland, and you were being critical of yourself for that, or you were kind of challenging yourself in that. I was thinking, what's my equivalent? I never sang the soldier song. You know, why didn't I? Because I always wanted to be connected to the guys left and right of me. I didn't want to be different. I wanted to be part of an Ireland team and contribute to that and be as part of that as anybody else. So why didn't I? And I remember I did think about it at one stage, and I just bottled it, you know. And maybe I'm not putting words in your mouth, but maybe you bottled it as well. And maybe if like people like you and I could stop bottling it, then, you know, maybe that might kind of change the narrative or challenge someone else. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking out loud here, you know, but there's something to that, maybe.
That's definitely a good point. I think sport is a massive vehicle in all of this. I remember, like, we could be going back 20 years. Myself and David Humphreys went round GAA clubs and rugby clubs all around Northern Ireland. And we did kicking clinics. So I was kicking, obviously, the Gaelic football, and he was kicking the rugby ball. And we ran, and honestly, no matter where we went, the reception, the amount of people who come out to see us, the real goodwill, all that sort of thing. And I never had one bad experience at any of the clubs that we went into. And we probably visited, between rugby and GAA, we might have visited 30 or 40 clubs over a couple of years. And not one bad experience. And I think, you know, like, there's no way that sport does not play some part in all of this. I think the GAA, I read an article not that long ago, why is there not more Protestants playing GAA? I mean, like, you know, when you think about the skill set, you know, that a lot of rugby guys have, a lot of them are not making it to the top of the tree, and you think that there's obviously a massive opportunity to tap into there as far as Gaelic games concerned, but it's obviously not as attractive a proposition as we think it is. And maybe not as welcoming an atmosphere as we think it is. So I would think that sport has a massive part to play in all of this. And I've probably one of the major things I've seen that has broken down barriers, and this may seem obvious, but has been sport in different gazes. And
it's
one
integration
thing,
by stealth, isn't it, Oisin? You know, it's if you call something, you know, okay, we're going to integrate now, you know? Mm. You know, people's reaction is, okay, well, this seems like a bit artificial. Whereas,
exactly,
you know, you can go to Raven, you've been going to Ravenhill for 20 years probably, and, like, that, you're doing it because you like watching rugby, you like watching live sport. This is the, you know, some of the biggest, best live sport you can have in Northern Ireland. And the idea that you wouldn't do it because of the community you come from, it's daft, you know, like you watch the Bulls and the Stormers, so why wouldn't you watch Ulster? Like,
yeah, Friday night it's a very social occasion, though I would say that, so that's probably another reason. But I think of all the sports, rugby, and when you consider rugby, when you consider Ireland rugby team, I still think that it has avoided a lot of that that green and orange thing. It seems a little bit devoid of politics. Maybe that's just me looking from the outside in, but it's always felt like that. I don't think people are really that obsessed. Yes, people were obsessed with the fact that Andrew and a few others didn't sing the national anthem and different things like that. But I do think that of all of the sports, and I know how Andrew feels with this, but it never seems to be quite as prevalent when we talk about the Irish rugby team as opposed to other sports. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I think definitely there's less attached to it. There's less kind of expectation of kind of prickly responses to things being said or the perception of it. I think definitely rugby, just the nature of being an All-Ireland sport, I think... yeah, it definitely is seen that way. It's seen as kind of more understanding, more of a welcoming environment, I think, for everyone.
But then, interesting, the point you were making earlier about the anthem, when you say you bottled it, Andrew. Well, you said you were very close. Were you in the middle of learning the words, or how were you going about
it? No, it was just, to be honest, I'm not going to say I'm an expert in even, you know, what the words mean or the language, Irish language. But I did just make a few inquiries about it, and, you know, has anybody ever done it in the past, and why don't we do it? And I just thought there was the potential. I was there to play rugby. I wasn't there as a revolutionary, you know. I just wanted to play rugby, and I wanted to be connected to the lads I was playing with, and that's why I thought about it. But you know, certainly the politics of it all was not on my agenda. It was just being connected to the guys I was playing with. And then I just got a couple of people, you know, said there's a chance you'll get a bit of a hard time from it. And some exactly the same as what Oisin's talking about there. I just didn't fancy getting a hard time. And I decided it was best to leave it.
Hanging over all this is this question of border poll, which has been gaining momentum. It was partly what your conversation was framed around, Andrew, on Clare Byrne. I got the sense that you're very comfortable with that happening anytime soon anyway, that it could bring a lot of the divisive stuff we're talking about to the fore and force people into a position that they mightn't be comfortable, including yourself, that you mightn't be comfortable being in.
Yeah, I think you know, with the Good Friday Agreement, we are entitled to that. And all my argument or my take on it is just, I just don't know if we're ready. I think it might be a healthier approach just to leave it some time until we get address some of these things, maybe the education, maybe make some progress in another area. But I think until we understand each other's perspectives more and have more of an appreciation and more of a collective unity, then I just think it's always going to be ideology is going to trump kind of values, and then that will just divide us further. That's my concern. I think if we leave it some time, hopefully we'll make some progress in some of the areas we've talked about here. We might be in a position to have a conversation again where it's not binary. I think binary is just an oversimplification of it, and it's going to require someone a lot smarter than me to come up with another solution or another alternative. But I just think we need to spend time with each other, even in the political end of things, just to understand, to appreciate, to be a bit more creative and challenge ourselves. I just think that binary approach is just slightly lazy, and I think it could be difficult for us at the minute.
Where do you stand on that, Oisin?
Well, even before we get into the unionist side of it and how difficult it would be for a unionist to, somebody from a unionist background to accept that, I even look at it, and this won't be a popular view with my cohort, but I feel as if we are craving the love of an individual, and in this case, the individual is the South of Ireland, and that love is not being reciprocated. And we're forcing ourselves upon them, and that's not good. I don't think the South have any hunger for a united Ireland, and I think that we are so not ready, in the North for that. I mean, if you see what's going on in Belfast the minute over, okay, partly the funeral, but also partly the Brexit situation, the tariffs, the protocol, you name it. Bored out of my tree with that stuff at this stage. But you see what's going on there. Imagine that we did have a border poll and we voted for it. What's that going to do for society in the North? I just think, again, it's not going to be popular with my crew, but I don't think that it's a runner, because I think there's way too much work to be done before we even talk about that. But look, it looks as if it's something that is going to happen. Not, I don't mean the United Ireland, but, you know, some sort of border poll within the next number of years. But again, like, I don't particularly want to be part of Southern Ireland if they don't want me. You know, does that make any sense whatsoever? Because that's the overwhelming feeling I get. And every time I hear Leo Varadkar or Micheál Martin talking about this stuff, that's the overwhelming feeling I get from them. And if they don't want me, well then, two fingers to them as well.
All right, it's a pretty strong point at which to finish, lads. Listen, that's absolutely great stuff. It's I think it's really interesting to hear the two of you talk about all that and share your own experiences and perspectives. But Andrew, Oisín, brilliant, thank you.
Thanks, Jade.
Cheers, fellas.
We keep saying the word historic, and I apologise if some of you listening, perhaps on the mainland, think we're over egging the cake here. But believe me, it is impossible to over exaggerate how the people of this island have been feeling about this match over the last, I was going to say the last couple of weeks, but actually it's over the last few months, ever since, in fact, the game was actually scheduled to be played here. Just listen to this.
My only objection was the playing of God Save the Queen. I think that's just adding fuel to the fire, as I said.
I find it most insensitive that they would have God Save the Queen sung. And I think the wording of God Save the Queen should have been examined, because I think the words are not appropriate to a park where so much of our history.
The words, particularly in the first verse, I suppose, of it are rather provocative, in my opinion anyway, you know.
I thought that was amazing.
What was all the fuss about?
Further ahead, the game settles.
Really great stuff there, I thought, from Oisin and Andrew. Thanks again to the two of them for doing that, for having that chat. I think Oisin talked about every time there's a step forward, something bad seems to happen. And it was sort of the same with that conversation. I was thinking, this sounds good. Yeah, middle ground. Yeah, sports, arts. Yeah, communities coming together. And then you hear, you know, Oisin has to stop himself from using certain phrases, or Andrew has to explain to his six-year-old kid why he's looking at burning cars in the street. And you think, oh, right, okay, there is still quite a long way to go here.
We ain't done yet. But yeah, thanks so much to the two lads. Because it's not easy to talk about stuff like this, you know? Mm. Like the easy option, as they said. I mean, I think they were being very harsh on each other, on themselves.
Bottler, I'm a bottler. No, but, you're a bottler. No, we're both bottlers.
But that was quite something.
I think even Andrew Trimble talking about how close he came to seeing an error on a vein, or how he considered doing it, was quite interesting in its own right. So yeah, I second that motion, Murph. Not bottlers. Neither Oisin nor Andrew Trimble are bottlers.
And I mean, we could talk all we like about the national anthem. If he'd asked any of the Munster or Leinster or Connacht players that he played with, so what does could you translate Aaron Levine for me?
Yeah, I know.
I think there would be quite a few boys looking at each other going, poor. Do you want to ask Dunica? how many of us can actually translate word for word our own David? Not too many of us, I don't think.
I'd imagine some of you might have some views in that conversation. As always, we would love to hear them. editor@secondcaptains.com is the email address. Andrew did say that a sense of humour is important, and that at least has not disappeared in Northern Ireland. Shane Todd tweeted a video. Last weekend in Larne, someone tied a photographer's shoelace to a fence without him knowing. There already is a Super League. It's called the Irish League. I don't know. Did I send this video on to you? You already seen it?
I did. I saw it a couple of days ago.
Murph,
Jill is still very much in touch with the Irish League, as you can imagine. Keeping a keen eye on Larne and distillery.
Is that photographer boys. Protestant, Catholic, Republican, Unionist? None of the above.
Doesn't matter.
Whatever
doesn't
a man matter. Calls himself, once he finds his shoelace is tied to a fence, he's not getting out of there with a little help. It doesn't matter what you are, who you are. Can somebody please untie my shoelace?
Took it in very good style, I have to say. He appeared to be laughing uproariously even as he was asking for help.
Yeah, that was before he realised he was going to end up on the internet going viral. Maybe.
Yeah,
I think seems to have a sense of humour. So well done on that, photographer in Larne. Keep up the good work. Thanks so much, Murph. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Ciarán.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks for listening. Back tomorrow.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. Those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.